Welcome to What a Day. Happy Wednesday. I'm Joe What a Day Lowry. And with me is the president of Thursday Night, Mr. Phil DeCesare. Phil, how's your What a Day Wednesday going?
Happy hump day, Joe. Very good. I've been looking forward to this all week, man. You know?
It seems like a lot of people out there have garnered some interest and so forth. I see them strolling in on the stream right now, so that's good. So in case everybody's been living under a rock the last few days, we have a special guest tonight. He is the son of the legendary, I mean, what kind of word describes Harley Race? I mean, legendary Hall of Famer.
Wrestling royalty, perhaps.
Wrestling royalty. I mean, how do you introduce the son of a legend like Harley Race? But nonetheless, Justin Race, as seen on the Dark Side of the Ring. If you haven't caught that on Vice TV, it's a must watch. And right now we're going to bring in Justin to the show right now. Here he is, Mr. Justin Race. How are you?
Hey, Joe. What a day.
What a day. That's it. Well, that's the most, most subdued
it
what a day been. I've ever heard.
It's been quite a day, I tell you.
So this is great. First off, thank you for appearing on What a Day here on Money in the Pharaoh channel. It's greatly appreciated. You've obviously garnered a lot of attention since Dark Side of the Ring. I guess my first question basically is were you notified in advance with Dark Side that they were doing a special on your dad?
By the way, you guys were asking how to describe him or what to call him or whatever. Dad is a good way to do it.
There you go. There you go. Dad. That's always a good three-letter word.
About a year ago, I guess it was, Vice contacted us.
Okay.
Me. And asked if they could discuss doing a documentary on my father. And I said, well, sure. What do you have in mind? I obviously want to know what. So a gentleman named Dave Hodgson came down from Vice TV, came down from Toronto. Okay. And met with myself and my mother. And we talked for hours. I mean, we went out to lunch and it turned in. We were almost there for dinner.
Oh, wow.
At the restaurant, and we kept telling him stories and he kept laughing, and we just kind of came to a mutual agreement that this needed to be done.
Sure. Now, with the story of Dark Side of the Ring, were you okay with the way they showcased your dad and so forth?
Oh, sure. I mean, okay. Everyone's got, there's dark side, light side to everybody.
Sure. No, I get that. Yeah. I mean, there was some.
Rather than looking at it as the dark side of the ring being like the bad side of the ring, I kind of looked at it as more in the ring, your spotlight's on. Outside the ring, it's dark.
Sure.
And we were talking about outside the ring.
Yeah.
Excellent. Excellent. Now, we have people in the chat. We're asking them to ask questions. So as they filter in, we'll try and get some questions out there. If you're just joining us, folks, feel free to ask a question for Justin. Keep it respectable, of course, as we always say, chat rules are in effect. You know how social media can be, Justin. You might get some guy that's just going to come on here and say, hey, just ask you something so crazy. But you did share a couple of
pictures.
You did send me a couple of pictures, never before seen pictures. I don't even know which one to pick, but I'm just going to pick a random one here. I'm going to flash
it. You throw it up there and I'll tell you what it was.
All right. So I'm going to flash this one up here. Here's a good one. What can you tell us about this picture right here?
That is the Osaka Palace. Osaka Castle in Osaka, Japan.
Oh, wow.
And interestingly enough, about 15 years or so, give or take, after this picture was taken, I actually went to school in right outside of Osaka University.
Okay.
That's my dad, my mom, and language professor at Kyoto University. His name was Kimio Kotani.
Oh, wow.
And we met him he brought exchange students over to America every year.
Sure.
And he found out that dad lived in Kansas City, and he wanted basically stop rescheduled the trip around coming to see my father in Kansas City with his students.
Okay.
And thus a big friendship began. In fact, a couple of years after he started bringing the students over to America, we actually had them down at our lake house for a weekend, all 50 of them.
Sure.
And that just started a friendship that endured. Every time we went to Japan, he was the, you know, the behind the scenes kind of tour guide for us.
Okay.
But he was a great friend.
Excellent. Excellent. That's a great picture too, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
I do have a question from the chat from Ja Will.
Oh, love J.A. Will.
I'm sure you've had this question asked a million times, Justin, but he wants to know that, did you ever think about becoming a wrestler yourself?
Not really. My parents kind of kept me away from that part of the bit. And like from, you know, my father, first of all, my father said, get an education, use your brain, not your body. You end up like me. And yeah, well, he was gimping around, you know, by 40 or so.
Sure.
But back then, dad wrestled 300 days of the year.
Right.
And it was so hard on the family and so hard on his body.
Oh, sure.
That they were like, you know, let's go to school, let's get educated, and let's move on to the business.
So is that kind of a turnoff for you, Justin, with him always being in pain or limping around, especially with, like you said, he traveled 300 days, so he only got X amount of time with you and your mom.
So well, that's why we traveled so much. That right. was how you spend time with dad.
Oh, so you did travel with him while he was on the road wrestling and so forth. Okay.
I had been to several different countries by the time I was 8-9 years old.
Oh, nice. Nice. Now, Jason Moaning has a question. He wants to know, did you ever go golfing with your dad or any of the wrestlers like Bubba and Luger and all those guys?
Yes, I did. I actually grew up on a golf course.
Okay. Was that a planted question here? I feel like I just got
played. Yeah, really. Somebody knew me where I was. I grew up right on an ice golf course, and that's kind of segues from the last question. My sure. father used to tell me, play golf. You can do it until you're 90 and make a lot of money doing it. And of course, with my father being my father, I played golf, but I had to wrestle and play football and get all banged up myself.
I was going to ask you that. You were a high school athlete, correct? You played football?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What football, position did you play? I was wide receiver.
Nice, nice.
And then I was a state national champion wrestler several times.
Yep, you have a
name. Yeah. I wanted to be a pro football player, but I got hurt in a wrestling match, ironically.
Oh, wow.
And by the time I got to my freshman year of football, when I went to a scholarship, Division I scholarship,
sure.
They said they x-rayed my neck. I broke my neck is what happened. And they said, you can't play football anymore. So that was the end of that.
Oh, Justin, it's interesting. Sure. Speaking of your athletic background when you were younger, I first became aware of your name from, and in fact, your picture from one of the old After Wrestling magazines. It might have been Sports Review Wrestling. I don't know if you remember appearing, but a picture of you and your dad, I think, were there. And he was doing something as far as maybe a fundraiser for a kid who had been injured maybe or sick. Do you recall this? This actually, we're in the magazine. And at that time,
I do remember that.
I was amazed because here I am thinking Harley Race is this villain and this mean guy. And here he is, you know, participating in some kind of fundraising for, I don't know if there was a classmate. You remember, I'm sure, way better than
I. Yeah, his name was Jeff Wasina, and he didn't actually go to my high school, but he... from little kid on through high school, he was a competitor of one of the guys on my wrestling team that I was always friends with.
Yeah.
And he unfortunately got into a catastrophic tackle in football and broke his neck and paralyzed. And dad had we remained close to the Wasina family, but dad did run a show in the Memorial Hall, one of the Thursday night shows, and they donated the money to his family and for doctor bills and, you know, what have you back then.
I remember that from the old magazines. I still have it somewhere, I'm sure, but that's the first time I heard of Justin Race.
Probably yellow by now.
Probably.
But yeah, they did. There was quite a few articles, including here in Kansas City in the sports section, about my father and I, because I was state champion. He was world champion. And
yeah.
So they do like an article on him and an article on me underneath it. And
I think I remember that now. I think I remember that, Phil. I think you just jogged my memory. You got to pull those old ones out of the filing cabinet now.
I have them all still somewhere. Yeah.
They're on microfiche somewhere.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. My very first wrestling magazine, Justin, was from the summer of 81 or thereabouts. It was Sports Review Wrestling, and it was your dad and Tommy Rich on the cover. Tommy Rich had a sleeper on your dad, and your dad was bleeding. And as soon as I saw that magazine, first of all, it opened the doors to other wrestling outside of the televised WWF at the time. Right. And I jumped right in, and that was the magazine cover and the magazine that just started me with my love of
really
it.
Cool. So, Tommy Wildfire Rich.
Yeah, wow. And your dad on the cover. Amazing. And he's graced several covers over the years and decades, too.
Really quick, though, Bill Apter was going to chime in, but he's covering.
I was just going to mention tonight. Bill.
Bill has very fond memories of you and your dad, and we spoke earlier this week, Justin. The antics, they had a lot of antics together, they did. So do you remember any of those antics at all?
Anybody that was around my dad ended up having antics of some sort.
Shenanigans?
Is that what we're talking? Yeah, well, shenanigans is putting it nicely, I guess, yeah.
I got
even myself, it even transcends into me. I've got a whole list of stories about things that he and I did. I'm compiling a book with it, with the stories. The book's called Don't Tell Your Mother.
I love it. Don't Tell Your Mother. What a great title for a book. Huh? Don't Tell You that right there.
That pretty much tells you what it's all about.
That right there makes you just want to pick it up and read it. That kind of title. That's pretty good. I got a question from the boss here. Mike Monty is asking, what did your father think of Bob Backlund? Did he have an opinion on Bob?
Well, Bob was a great champion. They wrestled often for being a different, you know, the champions of different organizations. They often didn't mix. Dad wrestled superstar Billy Graham. He'd wrestle Nick Bockwinkle, AWA.
Yeah.
I didn't know Bob as much. I knew him when I was very much younger, put it that way. So I don't have a whole lot of memory with him. How I looked at it is if they respect my dad, then I respect them because they respected my dad for some reason or another.
Oh, okay.
And so I grew up with a bunch of uncles in a locker room.
There you go. Yeah. Hey, real quick, Joe Myers, $10 shout out. Very good. Thanks,
Joe.
Super chat for a super guest on a super show. What a day, everyone. Justin, you are very popular in this chat right now. I just want to let you know. Another quick
question.
Jason's asking a good one. Justin, other than the Porsche, which other crazy high performance cars did he own throughout your childhood growing up? He seemed like a guy who would own them. Did he have a lot of cars?
He had a 1977 Trans Am 455 SD.
Is that a Smokey and the Bandit car?
I'm not much of a mechanic, but it was completely ported out. Exhaust pipes coming out under the driver's side and the passenger side door.
Oh, wow.
And I don't really know much. It put out about 750 horsepower, evidently.
Oh, my God. So he custom made this?
Well, he bought the car and then had the engine.
And then he had
basically a racing engine. That car was we would be going down the highway at 110, 115 mile an hour. And he pushed that thing to the floor and the tires would squeak.
Wow. Unbelievable.
So, yeah. He actually made our next door neighbor pee his pants in it. he said, Bob, come for a ride in my car. So they took off and they went, you know, you hear up the cul-de-sac and to the left. God. And then you hear this loud roar.
Oh, wow.
And you could just follow with your finger down there. And they pulled up and, you know, they went to the convenience store or whatever. They came back a few minutes later and Bob Springer was his name. He got out of the car. He didn't say anything to his son, Scott, or I. He said, oh, my God. And he walked into his house.
And we get another question from the boss here, asking, how do you feel about your mom and what she had to say about your dad on the dark side of the ring?
Oh, my mom's wonderful. In fact, she might drop by here in a minute.
Oh, that'd be nice.
She has her thing, you know, her stories, and I have my stories, and being the wife of a world champion, it's darn near impossible back then.
Oh, sure.
I think they lasted, they were married for 23 years. And I think they lasted longer than any world champion couple when a champion, you know, when they became champion or the, you know, whatever, they ended up getting divorced a couple of years later.
Okay.
Interestingly enough, they remained married the whole time he was world champion. When he stopped wrestling as much and was at home, that's when they got divorced.
Nice.
It's like, you know, it's good to be around. You know, it's fun to be around now that you're here all the time.
That's great. That's great. Gerard Millett's tuning in, and he had a question for you. How old were you when you found out that what your dad did wasn't real but choreographed?
Oh, you finally kind of figure it out as time goes on. I mean, there was no moment that my dad came in to me and said, look, this is how it goes. You know, when I was 8, 7, whatever years old,
sure.
My mom and dad used to kind of have a little code when we were traveling with him.
Okay.
And they'd decide if this, you know, when we go to the matches in the evening, is this going to be a bloodbath or is this going to be a wrestling match? And
right.
Wrestling match, I'd go, bloodbath, we'd go to play miniature golf or whatever, movie. But it doesn't always work that way. And, you know, you could see your dad getting hit over the head with chairs and blood flying everywhere. And I'd start crying and my mom would have to take me out. And
that's when you were real young, right? You said 8 or 10.
Yeah. So, I mean, but after a while, you know, you see all this blood in the chairs and this and that, you get sure. a little bit older and you go back to the dressing room and he's fine. You're like, well, wait a minute. And then, you know, so just right. kind of figure it out. There was never a moment.
Yeah. Now, when you say the bloodbath, did he already know way beforehand that this match was going to be a bloodbath? I mean,
you could kind of play. It was kind of indicative of who he wrestled with.
Right.
I mean, if he was had a match with Abdul the Butcher, my mom and I went to the movie.
I think everybody bled when you. Yeah. Everybody bled, even the ringside fans bled when Abdul the Butcher.
Yeah, there was more blood flying than the hospital, but.
Wow.
So, but if he was, you know, if it was Flair or one of the Funks, or although they got some pretty nasty matches going.
Sure.
Sometimes, and like I said, they weren't always right. They tried, you know, if I wanted to go and he was wrestling someone right. reasonable for me to go, it doesn't mean that they didn't get a little out of hand.
Sure.
And Dad was, right. when I say out of hand, Dad was a ring jump.
Right.
Everything that happened went according to how he wanted it.
Okay.
And kind of interesting.
He was the bar.
He'd be wrestling guys and things would get out of hand and get a little bit off of where he wanted it to go or whatever. Wow. So he'd put them in an arm bar or headlock or whatever and lean down close to their ears. They don't piss me off.
Right.
I read a story about him. He was in a tag team match in Japan with Brody, and Brody must have been laying in the kicks or doing something. But I think your dad caught him like in an ankle pick or said something, and he leaned over and said, Frank, slow down. We can do this the easy way or the hard way. And Brody behaved for the rest of the match. So, yeah.
So real quick, well,
we were on tour and with Japan and with Brody once. And he used to wear his sweatpants and he'd pull them up to around his knee, you know, back in the day. So I started wearing my sweatpants and pulling them off. Dad looked at me, Frank, what the hell are you doing to my son? Look how you both look like hobos.
So I got another question from the chat. Nicholas Davis, Nick, thanks for chiming in here. Justin, who inspired your father to become a pro wrestler? Do you know who inspired him? Or
The Zabiscos.
Stanley and Waldeck.
Back in that day. Yeah. I mean, people like, you know, that he ended up like Luthez.
Right.
The former champions.
So is that story true?
Even Gorgeous George to a certain extent.
Yeah.
Everybody knew Gorgeous George. Was it true? Sure. I mean, you know, some things you want to believe, some things you can't, but was it true that he hit a high school principal? The principal kicked him or something like that? Or that is
barely in high school. He was in 9th grade.
Oh, wow.
He did something in the gym and the principal jumped on top of him or whatever. He turned around and knocked the principal out.
Wow.
And was expelled and never went back to school. And that was the 9th grade.
Did he ever finish school or anything like that or get his GED? Nope.
He started professional wrestling 2 weeks before he turned 16 and never had another job.
Unbelievable.
He was wrestling before he could drive.
Sounds like it was in his blood. Sounds like it was in his blood.
Interestingly enough, back then he told me he had the choice, wrestling or be a Free Methodist minister. I was like, well, that's
yeah.
Well, it's kind of both the same, right?
Yeah.
Well, it's amazing how many people convert after they retire from wrestling. They have a second calling and become ministers and, you know, born again. And you know, they really find God, which is pretty amazing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Reverend DiBiase.
B40 has a question here. Was your dad recognized a lot when you were with him as a teen? I would say yes. Oh, but, yeah. I mean, could you guys go out to eat without having to sign autographs, get pictures, or how did that go? How was that for you growing up? Want to go out for Sunday dinner or something like that?
It was normal. I didn't know any different, right. But it was a good lesson that I learned from him. People would come up to the table, of course, like you said, and ask for autographs. And, you know, sometimes my mom would get a little hot. She'd be like, can't they wait till we're done eating or whatever?
Right.
And he'd always look at her and say, Yvonne, that person paid for this meal. That person paid for the vacation you just went on.
Oh, yeah.
And that person paid for the outfit you're wearing. You're nice to these people, because if it wasn't for their butt in a seat watching me, we'd be living in a tent.
Mm. Oh, that sounds and pretty organic. That sounds organic. I mean, it's like he knows. Mm-hmm.
That's how I grew up. I mean, I grew up that the most poignant thing he ever said to me, really, as I got older, was he said, Justin, if someone recognizes you or me or whatever,
right,
give them their 5 minutes.
Yep.
Let them ask their questions. Let them tell you what they saw when they were with their father when they were 10 years old or whatever, watching me on Saturday. He said, give them their 5 minutes because of the pain, you know, the butts and seat thing. But
sure.
It's 5 minutes they'll never forget.
Right.
And I have the honor of had met in my life, you know, very senior high level politicians, CEOs of companies and this and that. And it's really an honor to watch a powerful person like that melt back into a little boy, the nostalgia, just for a moment. I remember your dad when I was with my dad on Saturday morning, and this big, powerful guy kind of just turns into a little boy in front of me for a second. It's really quite cool.
That's
more of an honor for me to meet them than it is for them to meet me. But, you know, I try to tell them, but the honor, pleasure is all mine.
We do that every Friday night, a wrestling remembered. We melt back into that kid.
Absolutely. It's a great place to go to, man. I'll tell you, it really is. Yeah. Now, Justin, did you accompany your dad on the road to some of these meet and greets and autograph signings that came in, you know, later on in his life at all?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was there. I mean, it was the best I could. By then I had my family and my career, and, you know, so I couldn't be, it wasn't like when I was a kid, just go everywhere with him.
Sure. Yeah. I met your dad in April of 2016, I believe. He came up to Massachusetts as part of a larger show. And I got to spend just a couple minutes to say hi and everything. And I videoed it and it was just great. He signed a picture, of course. And I think it said, it's Harley Race. And I think it said 8-time world champion. And it might've said the greatest wrestler on God's green earth too.
Oh, I was going to say he signed best in sports.
Oh yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Nice.
That was his moniker. So
now, Justin, I want to share another picture. This one I kind of like, as never before seen, correct? That, you know,
throw it up there. Not that I know. I mean, like I said, sometimes I'll get sent a picture from fans.
Yeah.
That I don't even remember it being taken. It is at our house.
Yeah. Okay. So here's one that I like. Here's one I like right here. This one's cool. That one right there.
Oh, wow.
That is a great shot.
That is classic. I've never seen that either.
I mean, how old were you in this picture, Justin?
I was 12 years old. That's June 10th, 1983.
Yes.
Tonight he won the 7th world title against Flair in the Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis, Missouri.
My goodness. And look at you holding the 10 pounds of gold. What was that like? That is like the most prestigious belt.
Well, it was the 7th time, so it wasn't necessarily new, but it was...
Well, it's the first time for me looking at this picture. So.
Well, I mean, but by that time I had reached the age where it really meant something. I mean, you know, he had, I've spoke before, he didn't, you know, this just wasn't all of a sudden happen. He worked for many years and he'd wrestle Flair or the Funk Brother, one of the Funk Brothers, whatever.
Right.
And trying to get that 7th win. And he'd try and he'd come to that close and he'd lose and that closer and they'd get counted out, disqualified, what have you. So that was one of the coolest nights of my life.
Sure.
Really.
I recall just going back to the After magazines, of course, like Phil, I became a fan in the summer of 81. And of course, growing up in the Northeast, regulated to WWF wrestling and so forth. You know, I go to buy these magazines and lo and behold, I'm reading about Harley Race and Ric Flair. And I'm actually falling in love with these guys per se as wrestlers because we're getting a different view of wrestling. It's not the WWF type. It's definitely more, I know I said that word before, organic, more storyline, more intense and so forth. And I think I think Ric Flair just won like his, I don't know. They had a, I think they had a run. I think it was in the Kansas City, St. Louis area where they had a run where they beat each other for the title like twice or three times in a week or a month or something like that. Something weird like that.
It was a couple of times. I can't remember like, what you're talking about. It was a couple of times.
At one point, Harley Race was, he was the leader over Flair in World's Title One.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know.
Well, he was the first one to win it seven times. Luthez was six.
Six, yeah.
Dad was seven. Right. Vindad was eight.
Right.
And then that's when the organization started breaking apart, and Flair won it a bunch of times, but it wasn't like.
Yeah,
it wasn't NWA World Heavyweight.
Yeah, you just had a picture. Hold on for a second. You just had a picture of my mom and I with my dad. My mom's right here.
Oh, wow. Where's mom? Where's Yvonne? Where is she?
There she is.
Hello.
Hey. Hi.
Yvonne, so nice to meet you. You have a wonderful son there.
I know, but I want to know if you can have a tape made of this so that I know, don't tell your mother. Some of these things I've never heard before.
What, you want to tape of the show?
Tell your stories about that book. You guys did what?
So in the book, Don't Tell Your Mother, are you in it? Yvonne, are you in it?
When I'm not supposed to talk to her about it.
Book? What book?
I thought years later that you and your father did what?
Hey, Yvonne.
Well, I'm writing a book too, so
oh, you
I'll
are.
Get back to him.
Love it.
Is the name of your book Don't Tell Your Son?
Yeah, I'm going to name it Don't Tell Your Dad.
Don't Tell Your Dad. That's great. It's
wonderful. I don't tell anybody anything.
It's
you guys
wonderful.
Are doing a great job. I'm really proud of Justin, and I'm proud of the way he handles his interviews.
Let me ask you real quick, that story about how you met your dad. Did he really court you like that? Was it over a pizza pie and a cup of coffee?
Yeah.
Blueberry pie.
I'm a flight attendant, and I came in from a trip, and my roommate said, this guy was here today, and it was a picture of Harley, and he wants to meet you.
Okay.
I was sick. That was Saturday night, and I was supposed to go to Wisconsin. I was based in Minneapolis, and I was supposed to go to Wisconsin to my sister's baptism, and I called my dad, and I said, I'm just not feeling good. So the next day, Harley kept calling me all day long. And about 6:30 Sunday night, he said, why don't you let me take you out for a piece of pie and a cup of coffee?
Right.
I thought, maybe he's different than the other guys.
And then some.
That's the way we met.
Was it love at first sight?
No.
No?
No. Uh-uh.
He had to win you over. Is that what it was?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's really awesome. Big time. But his blonde hair really bothered me. I didn't like that.
You meant that. Speaking of this, there's a picture that Justin wanted me to share. How's this picture? Do you remember this one?
Yeah.
Good heavens, yeah.
Where was that taken at?
That's in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah, Tampa. We stayed at that same hotel every time we went to Tampa. I remember that hotel. I don't remember the name of it, but.
Wow, look at that picture. How old were you there, Justin?
Probably three. Yes.
3 years old, staying at a hotel in Tampa, having some good food there. That's awesome.
Oh yeah, breakfast time. It looks like.
Yep. And
I knew when I was a child that I was going to marry an athlete. I thought I was going to be a baseball player. Right. So that's why all you have all these pictures and stuff, because I put them together. I just knew that someday I was going to have this.
Oh sure, exactly.
Everything.
My mom used to do that too. It's called making memories. My mom passed in 07, but I have a box of pictures she took. If there were cell phones back in the day, she'd probably have like five.
Oh, good heavens.
There's always, I mean.
512 gigabytes isn't enough.
Oh, yeah. I know. Exactly. So yeah, she saved. She called it making memories. Yeah. That was back then. You didn't know. Yeah. 70s and 80s. You didn't know. Polaroids were a big thing, but.
And the Vice thing, you saw some of the 60 with all that Super 8.
Yeah, exactly.
Films
exactly.
From then before I was born.
Right. So did you like being a flight attendant?
I flew for 25 years.
Wow. And what airline did
then
you work for?
The boss made me quit.
The boss made you quit? Why was that?
He wanted me right under his thumb.
Okay.
He didn't want me traveling around the world.
What airline did you work for?
American Airlines.
Nice. Popular airline back then, that's for sure.
Yeah, I miss it.
Did you have to go to like airline attendant school and all that stuff? And
pretty rigorous, actually.
Rigors.
That's well, awesome. It was like 20,000 applicants and what?
Out of 20,000 applicants, only 2% make it.
Yeah. Wow.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Well, thank you so much for popping on.
And yeah. And thank you for sharing. Thank you for sharing, Carly, with us for all these years.
Thank you for having me on.
You gotta
part of our family.
So now you have to say, hey Joe, what a day.
Oh, geez.
Joe, what a day.
She said it better than you, Justin. She said it better than you.
Oh man, really? Well, tomorrow I'll call her up. Hey, Mom, what a day.
What a day. It does get infectious. It does do that. So,
but it was so nice talking to you, Joe.
Thank you so much for popping on. I appreciate
thank you,
it.
Yvonne.
You remind me of
popped in and out.
Yeah. She reminds bye-bye. Me of my mom. Take care. That was awesome. Thank you, Justin. For
moms
that.
Are
that
moms.
That was great. Great. 25 years.
It is
years
funny that she doesn't know some of the stuff my dad did to this day.
So you have a lot of stories like that you're putting in the book. So yeah,
I mean, of course, there's some, you know, there'd be some solemn things too, but right. For the most part, I'm just writing a laugh out loud type book. What can I think? Oh, well, I don't know what made me think of this, but we were in Rome and in the Vatican in the early 70s. I was probably 6-7 years old. And we're, you know, walking around in the Vatican and we were in the area where back then, I don't know how it is now, but back then you couldn't take pictures of things because they didn't want the flash bulbs and whatever affecting you know, decades or centuries old stuff. And so she was looking someplace else, and my dad had me, he was taking pictures of the stuff that he wasn't supposed to take pictures of, and he had me looking out for the Swiss Guard. All right, take it. And so he took a whole 36 rolls or whatever, 36 picture roll
in the Vatican.
Supposed to photograph. And after he got done and we went to find my mom, he looked over, don't tell your mother.
Okay. Oh, he was that type of dad. That's awesome. That's awesome. Mm-hmm. So how old were you then?
Six or seven.
And you're looking out for the Royal Guard, the Swiss Guard.
Yeah. That's a, geez, I was just like, dad, not now.
Oh my God. That is an absolute right. Just real quickly going back to growing up, obviously we're the same age. We talked about this on the phone the other day. Mm-hmm. So, high school, your friends, did they know of Harley's success? Did they know of him? And were you treated differently? Were you the it guy because of it? You know, how high school is, oh, his dad's Harley race. Like, how was that?
I was fortunate enough to be in the same school district with a lot of the same friends from second grade on through graduating high school.
Yep.
So all the kids that grew up with me, my mom and him were the mother and dad that made them chocolate chip pancakes after a sleepover.
Oh, wow.
Or a steak the night before. They just were, you know, they were the fun parents. Everyone came to my house and they had a lot of fun with my father. As we got into high school, of course, they understood who he was, but there was just, he wasn't that, I don't want to say he wasn't that big of a deal, but it wasn't that overwhelming or anything for them. It's just Harley, you know, is your dad in town? No, he's gone. Oh, all right.
Sure.
They did play jokes often on new kids that would come into the district.
Right.
As we were older, you know, in high school. They'd, you know, tell him about who my dad was. Oh my God, that's his dad. Yeah, you don't want to go over there when Harley's there. You know, play him up to be all this mean guy and stuff. And we'd, you know, one time they'd be on their way over and they said, well, we're going to go by Justin's house and his dad's there. So just be real cool. Okay. And he'd walk in, he'd see my dad and about pee his pants and dad would give him that promo look and, you know, what are you doing here? And then, you know, start bursting out laughing. All the kids, all the friends would laugh and they'd be like, we're just kidding. He's a nice guy. Don't worry about it.
That's awesome.
Yeah. Your dad did have, it's funny you mentioned that his promo and interview style was, I've never heard your dad yell through any of his promos, which is really amazing when you think about how many interviews and promos are just, you know, loud, you know, overbearing.
Well, his voice was deeper, it seemed like.
Yeah.
It didn't, instead of going up, it went down.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to know about promos, though, cutting promos with my dad when I was younger, he'd be doing the, oh, Flair, I'm coming down to get you. And I would be behind the camera jumping up and down. Right in the middle of the promo, I'd make him laugh. So he'd have to start it over.
Oh, geez.
Classic.
He'd say, Vaughn, get him out of here. Let me get this promo done.
I have a question. In one of the promos early on that I saw, he had like a $25,000 bounty on Flair, I think, or yeah, something Flair, like that. Yeah. Was that real money they used in the suitcase?
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Yeah. I always wondered, like, was it fake money as a kid? Like, oh, is that real money that they were using? So I wasn't sure. But
well, often, like, back then, I don't know how Hollywood does it now, but when they had to show enormous amount of money or a big amount of money or whatever, they just go to a bank and put some collateral down, say, hey, we're going to use this for 5-6 hours and we'll bring it right back. Here's collateral for it, whatever.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, it was real money.
So that's how they
I don't know if it came from somebody's pocket, but it was real money.
Wow. Okay. So. Yeah. That must have been something when Andre the Giant threw all that money away during WrestleMania 1.
I remember. Yeah.
Unbelievable.
It's but Andre was fun. You mentioned Andre, Joe, and I'm sure that Justin is familiar somewhat with Andre, because Andre and Harley had so many legendary matches. And of course, Andre apparently admitted the two people who concerned him the most in terms of ever confronting were Haku and your dad. So Andre apparently had a lot of respect for your dad.
Yeah, he did. To me, he was Uncle Andre when I was a kid.
Wow.
He'd stay at our house. Dad had this big, huge bed made for him or whatever when he came in.
Oh, wow.
And there's a place here in town called Michael's Big and Tall. And Andre would come in town not to wrestle, to go to the store downtown with my dad to have clothes made for himself.
Wow.
Oh,
wow.
Obviously couldn't buy them.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. He'd go to the boat cover store or something. But he was a really nice man. He Flair told a funny story about, like, where you were talking about him being with Haku and my dad being like a concern for Andre. Andre, he body slammed and suplexed Andre in the same match.
Yeah.
And Rick was young. He told the story. I'm just retelling it.
Yeah,
he was young, so kind of Mark, and he went up to my father after the match, and he said, "How'd you get Andre? What did you tell Andre? How'd you get him to do that? You know, let you body slam him in the head, suplex him? Did you ask him? Why the hell would I ask him? I told him what we were gonna do." And Rick was like, "You just told him."
Oh, geez.
I'm not gonna ask him. I'm Harley Race.
That's awesome.
So I guess that might be where Andre was coming from. Is
right on,
that ring. It didn't, you know.
Sure. So
real quick, we got to pay some bills and take a timeout. So we're going to be right back here. So don't go away. And by the way, chat, thank you all for tuning in. Ask some questions. Yes. We are here with Justin Race, son of Harley Race, and we'll be right back. So hold on 1 second, guys.
All right.
The Monty and the Pharaoh Show is brought to you by. Because wine is your second favorite four-letter word. California wine, New York attitude, good fucking wine. Yeah.
For years, we were known as Central Veterinary Associates. And we know that some of you were not exactly thrilled with the services that were provided.
But a new day has arrived. We're changing and will now be known as Premier Veterinary Medical Group.
But it's much more than a name change. It's a new management team, a new attitude, with a new state-of-the-art modern facility in Rockville Center, New York.
We're going all out to provide the best possible care for your pets. And that includes 24-hour day, 7-day-a-week emergency care from a team of highly trained professional emergency care veterinarians.
So check out the all-new Premier Veterinary Medical Group. We're ready to serve Nassau and Queens counties with compassion, commitment, and the utmost confidence.
And we have immediate openings for overnight emergency vets with great pay and outstanding benefits. Contact us today at premierveterinarymedicalgroup.com/careers.
Tired of that same old breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Same old tasting scrambled eggs, burger, that dinner steak, ribs, or pork chops? Why not add a little bit of spice or just a touch of heat to make the difference? Change that scrambled egg with a little bit of Johnny Fabulous's John Cena Sr.'s Million Dollar Jalapeno Hot Sauce. Great on burgers, steaks, chops, and those barbecued ribs.
Looking to improve your fitness business while keeping your bottom line in good shape? Let the gym administrator help you achieve those goals. With their powerful team of fitness industry professionals at the ready, the gym administrator covers a wide range of industry-related products and services that will help you build your business and increase profits. The gym administrator works with reliable industry suppliers and vendors that place a heavy emphasis on service, just the way you remember it. Give them a call at 914-494-1066 or visit them on the web at thegymadministrator.com as well as all social media platforms. The Gym Administrator, all your fitness needs under one roof. Scan the barcode at the bottom of the screen to get started today.
All right, folks, we are back. Bills are paid. I am joined by the president of Thursday Night, Phil DeCesare.
All right, let's go have some fun.
And, and of course, the son of Holly Race, Justin Race, has joined us graciously. You know, I'm sitting here trying to figure out how to introduce Holly Race because I'm so starstruck by it. I'm like getting tongue-tied. Yeah. And you, if anybody knows me, I never get tongue-tied. So, Justin, it's really, really great to have you on here. So, we do have a couple of questions coming in here.
Sure.
Benny Scala, one of our boys, the player from our channel, is asking if the flying headbutt was painful for him to execute.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was. In fact, when I was a kid, when I was young, my mom used to tell him, there he is. My mom used to tell him, Harley, you got to stop doing that. You're going to get hurt or you're going to end up hurt over years or whatever. And that's, you know, he did what the fans wanted to see. And that was one of the things they wanted to see from him.
Sure.
So he got a little bit older and I was probably in high school. And I just remember one day distinctly, he was looking for something. He couldn't find it in the room or whatever. And he looked over at me. He said, and this is another don't tell your mother thing. He looked over at me. He said, I should have listened to your mother, that damn flying headbutt. I can't remember anything anymore. And he said, but don't tell her I've said that. And, you know, she was right. Don't tell her I said that.
Right. I think it was Trevor Murdoch in the series on Vice TV, Dark Side, said that he had this artistic way of doing the headbutt where it looked like it hurt, but it really hurt Harley more than anything. You know what I mean? When you see him do that headbutt, it looks... He does it pretty strategically, and it that takes art form to do that. And sure. I was very impressed with that.
An athlete to do something like that.
Yeah, I mean, it was...
He was very always concerned. He was very concerned for the fans, for their safety when they went outside the ring.
Right.
And he was concerned for who he was wrestling too. He didn't want to make anybody get hurt.
Sure.
He didn't want to get hurt. And, you know, I don't think there was anybody that really could hurt him. The thing with Hogan, he hurt himself.
Sure.
Like I said, if it wasn't going how he wanted it, don't piss me off.
There you go.
But he was very concerned for the well-being of everyone around him, more so than he was for himself.
Nice. Now we have another question coming in here. Justin, who was your dad's best friend from his years during wrestling? Who was he closest to the most, you think?
Wrestler-wise?
Sure.
Probably Terry Funk.
Terry Funk?
Maybe Jack Briscoe.
That's funny because what comes to mind to me is Ric Flair.
Well, I was going to bring in Rick too, but he knew Terry and all that before Rick.
Before, okay.
But I think after once Rick, you know, really got into when he and my dad were, you know, competing all the time.
Sure, right.
He had a tremendous amount of respect. I watched a kind of a question and answer with him and Rick. I don't know when it was taped, some years ago.
Right.
But my dad basically said that Rick was the best thing that ever happened to the squared circle, as he called it.
Oh, wow.
And he basically he said some accolades to Rick, and the host said, Rick, how does that make you feel? And all Rick could say was thanks, and a tear came down his eye.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
And he didn't really say anything, and the audience finally realized that he was so choked up he couldn't talk, so they just gave him a standing ovation.
Wow.
incredible. That's absolutely incredible.
You know, you mentioned Terry Funk too, Justin, and Terry Funk also owned a Trans Am back in the day, and loved to race around Texas and every other place too. Yeah. I wonder if there was ever a battle of the Trans Ams. And
well, my parents lived in Amarillo, Texas, but that was before I was born.
Yeah.
So, but I know that the Trans Am my dad had was in the middle 70s. I don't remember if he ever took it down to race.
No.
He'd race just about anything anywhere, though. As you've heard probably other wrestlers saying.
Was it a Smokey and the Bandit type?
From St. Louis to Kansas City.
Sure.
Was it a Smokey and the Bandit type Trans Am?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I can picture that.
Smokey and the Bandit. Another quick story. He bought in 1977. He bought my mom a 911 Targa Porsche SC Targa. And back then they didn't have manufacturers all over the world. They bought it from Germany and they made So he got the car and a couple days later, he and I took off on this road in Kansas. Back then there was nothing built out there. It was dirt roads in this one highway.
Wow. Wow.
There weren't enough really county policemen to patrol that far out. We call that the Autobahn.
Sure. Oh, yeah.
We got down there and off we go in this Porsche.
Oh, my God.
Police officer at that speed, what are you going to do?
Yeah.
So we blow past and then we come up and then like a Smokey and the Bandit style. These cars, nose to nose across the freeway or across the highway. And drawn over the hood,
the guns drawn. They drew the guns.
Oh yeah, they were throwing the guns, God. Everything at us. So he slows down finally, and they kind of put a semicircle, like 10, 15, whatever cops come walking up to the car, and they all have their hands right there on their hip.
Oh my goodness!
One of them broke out. He came up, looked down into the driver's side of the car, and he, Mr. Race, you have any idea how fast you were going? And my dad said, well, the speedometer was pegged at 150.
That's amazing.
I'm trying to hide anything. And the officer said, sir, you were going 163 miles an hour.
Oh, he's 13 miles per hour.
So you were tripling the speed limit. And my dad said, 163? Heck, I was letting off. I saw you. So you're telling him you were going faster. So he said, well, officer, it's a new car. I'm breaking it in. And the officer said, well, now that the car's broke in, the speed limit is around 55.
Sure.
And would you mind signing some autographs for the guys? And so he got out and he signed autographs, got back in, and we turned around, came home, no ticket, no nothing. And he looked over at me, don't tell your mother. And I never did. Nowadays, I don't know what kind of a penalty you'd get for taking a 7-year-old on a 165 mile an hour car ride. But
the kid would be taken away. The ticket would be astronomical, and it's such a different world.
Child services would be in your life for a long time, I think.
Those were great days, Justin. I could ride in the back of my dad's pickup, around. Yeah. We all could, the three boys, and no one would say now, my God, they'd arrest you and have you on the news.
Yeah, I sat in the back of a Ford Pinto on the hump seat in the back. So, yeah.
Doubly dangerous.
I remember those days. Questions are really coming in hot and heavy here. Now, Maria Davis wants to know. Maria Davis, by the way, is the, what do we call her?
She's the first lady of pro wrestling.
I want to say queen every time I think. Okay, she's the first lady of wrestling. Maria Davis has a question. Justin, did you ever take your dad to school day?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, in fact, you take your dad, there was the father's son day, there was show and tell.
You wasn't brought necessarily him. You brought him for everything, right? Yeah.
Well, he'd bring the belt in, let all the kids wear it and hold it and this and that. The first time I ever actually, not my dad, but the first time I ever had to do the 3 to 5 minute speech, your first time in elementary school, whatever. Sure. I did mine on Rufus R. Jones. It was supposed to be on a co-worker of your father's.
Who was a big wrestler around here, too. Rufus R. Jones is a big wrestler around here. I'm in Centerville, Iowa, and that's all they talk about is Rufus R. Jones coming to town. I'm like, wow, okay.
Yeah.
He's the one guy that my dad would headbutt, and they'd kind of look at each other like, who hurt more?
Oh, wow.
He had a hard head, too.
You have an interesting story, too. I think it involves Rufus R. Jones. Did they own a bar together? or something.
Well, Rufus owned a bar.
Rufus owned the bar.
We call it Midtown area, toward Kansas City, downtown. And
this is Dad
was in there eating.
You have a story about that too, right? When somebody tried to rob the bar. Go ahead, tell that story. It's a cool story.
All right. So my dad and I are there having dinner, and two guys come through the door of the place, and one like stayed at the door so people couldn't get out or in, and the other guy started going table to table robbing people.
Oh wow!
And he came to Dad. And give me your watch, your wallet, whatever. And Dad, from a sitting position, Dad was left-handed. From a sitting position, went up, hit the guy so hard in the jaw that both jaw bones clicked off the side of his head. He hit him so hard.
Oh man!
Of course, the guy went down.
How does that happen?
And I didn't know that was possible. The guy went down. Of course, out. He picked him up and he walked toward the guy at the front door. So, if you're going to shoot me, you're going to shoot your friend first.
Oh, geez.
And threw him into the other guy. They both rolled out the front door of the restaurant onto the sidewalk.
Yeah.
He grabbed the bag and put it on the bar. He said, folks, come get your stuff. And he sat back down and finished dinner.
That's unbelievable.
And, of course, told me not to tell my mother.
I was going to say, don't tell your mother. You can end every story with that. Every story can end with that. But
That's why she's still so amazed at some of them. She's like, you guys, what? Your father. Her favorite thing to say was Harley when he was acting up.
There's an interesting question here about B40's asking it. I heard Harley hated Jerry Lawler, especially for beating Andre and editing a tape of him and Harley wrestling to make it look like Jerry beat him. Do you know anything about that?
Oh, rumors. I don't know. I think that I think it's true, but a lot of those guys didn't get along inside or outside the ring.
Sure. You can't dance with everybody. Right.
Business.
Right.
There's pro football players that they want to knock the guy out, tackle him or whatever, the quarterback during the game, but then they'll go out and have a beer together afterward. Right. And there's pro football players that don't get along.
Wow.
So it's just kind of natural in a competitive combat sport that you're going to have some people you just don't like.
Well, I was going to say, you can't dance with everybody. So that's usually the case.
Exactly.
Right.
One thing that can be said about my dad, though, is as far as respect goes, I don't know that there's a wrestler that he didn't respect him.
Universal. Right.
They didn't like him, but they certainly respect what he did.
Yeah.
Just shooting back to Ric Flair real quick. Somebody mentioned in the chat, what was the name of the store? I don't know if it's St. Louis or whatever that he used to go and get his suits at. Was there a store that
you mean Andre?
They said Ric Flair got suits at some store. Harley introduced him to a store somewhere in St. Louis. I think it was. I got to go back in the chat.
It kind of rings a bell. I don't remember the name of the store, but
I'm going
to remember that happening.
Question. Sure. Justin, were you allowed to, and I assume the answer is yes, to attend the annual infamous Harley Race barbecue each year? And if so, are there pictures from these wild times?
Oh, I don't know where the I've got pictures, but I just remember Dad had this big smoker. He was the grill master.
Yeah,
and they like to smoke around. They use the smokers around here a lot. That's one thing.
Yeah. He had one that you tow behind the car.
Yeah. Oh wow. Okay. Go ahead. Yeah.
And he'd have the guys over, and he had this deck in the back of the house that was reinforced. It was probably 10, 12 feet off the ground, but it was reinforced and they're double the support beams and whatever. Basically, it was made for a couple of elephants to play patty cakes on. And 10, 11 of the guys had come out there, 15, whatever, and you could actually feel that deck moving around.
Swaying bow.
He'd smoke, for 15 guys, he'd smoke, 10, 12 slabs of ribs, 100 chicken breasts.
There's not enough food for that. Yeah.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah. And it's always two. Wrestlers never ate after two if they worked that night.
Oh, no kidding.
No kidding.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Okay.
Yeah. But
I gotta write that down.
So afterward, you'd be in the house going in a linen closet to get a towel or something, and you'd find a plate of food in there. The guys would go and make their plates and go hide them in the house and then go make another plate because they were afraid that he was going to run out, which he never did. He had more food than they could possibly eat.
That is
you'd find this moldy chicken
oh yeah
ribs
oh, yeah.
plate like 2 weeks later, I was like, oh my God, these guys.
Did they forget to forget they put it there?
Yeah, they forget where they put it. Or you'll find some desserts hiding around somewhere underneath a table or something. You find a piece of pie. Nice.
I got another question here. It said Harley said in his book, this is from Jason, by the way. Jason Moning, thank you for your question. Harley said in his book that he had a Clark Griswold moments on family road trips. Do you remember any?
Let's see. Which ones can't I tell? Or which one can I tell?
Oh, you could say.
One time when I was young, what's that?
Christy Brinkley driving by, maybe. And
yeah, that would have been nice.
Of course, I was thinking of Christmas trees. But
okay.
This was my mom and him. I don't know who's at fault. We had a van, and on the top, had one of those luggage things on the top of the van.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
1970s yeah. van, so one of those full-size Chevy vans.
Scooby-Doo.
And I don't exactly know how they got into the motel, but I think they took a different way out, and there was a, by the office, the front office, there was a bridge sure. or whatever, an awning.
Yeah.
And drove through it and pulled the luggage rack right off the back of the van.
Oh, wow.
Oh, no.
And we were on our way. My grandma and grandpa, my mom's mom and dad, so my grandma and grandpa were with us. He had to get to the next town.
At least it wasn't on Edna.
Obviously, this car is now undrivable. So he had to go to the airport, take a plane to the next town. Well, we got the van fixed, and then we kind of caught back up to him. But yeah, he ripped the top right off the van.
Oops.
He was in a rut. Who knows? I mean, like I said, he goes Mach 3 everywhere. That includes parking lots.
That's a ride. That's a ride.
Now, the time about he realized it was too short, he was probably already under it.
Talk about someone living up to his last name. Isn't that wild?
Yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah, that is true. Clark Griswold, I even get called that nowadays with the Christmas lights, but he had a wreath around the double front doors, and we had like a round, driveway.
Sure.
And he made a big wreath, real frond wreath.
Right.
And he left it up until, I don't know, March, something in March, I guess. And the guy across the street, Bob Springer, the one that he made go to the restroom in his pants with the car.
Bob.
He yells across the street, Harley, you ever going to take your Christmas wreath down? And Dad looked at it. He grabbed the top and pulled it down, took the bottom and pulled it up with his foot. He said, there, now it's an Easter egg.
Oh, there you go. Did you see the Iron Claw movie by any chance, Justice?
I guess.
Mm-hmm. There's a question here from Arturo Almazan. It says, what do you think of the portrayal of your late father, Mr. Harley Race, in the Iron Claw movie? How did you think that portrayal went?
I think Kevin Anton, who I do speak with quite often now, did a marvelous job. I think he did just an excellent job. I was watching that movie, and I could see my dad in it.
Sure.
The way he cut the promo, especially that promo that he cut, the way he held the belt and that kind of that grimacing look that people love to hate.
I loved when he tilted his head down. He looked so great when he did that.
Think Kevin did just an outstanding job. In fact, Kevin and I have become friends as a result of that.
I know we're getting caught up in the stories, but I got to go through some of these pictures with you, Jeff. So here we go.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I'll put them up. You tell us a quick blurb about him, and we'll just keep going from there. How's that? Okay.
That sounds great.
This one right here you sent me. Where was that one?
That was in Hawaii. And it seemed like every time we went to a place like that, somehow my mom would come up with matching outfits. And
I was just going to say that. Everybody matches here.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of pictures of us like that. Like I said, my dad and I begrudgingly wore them. Well, I was just acting like my dad. My dad's like, I don't know where they're at. So I'd act the same way.
Were these vacations or were they both working vacations?
Most 99% of the time they were working vacations. I believe this was a time when we were maybe on our way back from Japan and stopped in Hawaii for a couple of days. Right. Or vice versa. We stopped for Hawaii for a couple of days and then went to Japan. But that was in Hawaii.
Cool. All right. Next picture. Here we go. There you go.
That would be my bedroom when I was in middle school and high school.
I could tell we're the same age, so that mullet's coming into form. So I can.
Oh yeah, it's getting there. And that's my cat. My mom and dad, both of them hated cats, but I wanted a cat, so they got me a cat. I named my cat Ask'em. So when people say, "What's your cat's name?" I'd say Ask'em.
Ah, there you go. Cool. That's good. All right.
And the dog's name was Mitzi. But yeah, that's my bedroom.
Oh, nice. There you go. Excellent.
It's a waterbed. I had a waterbed, but back when waterbeds were the big thing.
You are all you are all 80s out.
Oh yeah. Oh geez. Here we go. I think he's wearing a shirt of his own.
Where was this one taken at?
This was, I believe, in Japan.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, because those are a little gift. In Japan, there's kind of a it still goes on today. Whenever you go visit someone, you bring them a little gift.
Right.
You know, nothing expensive, just a little something.
Sure.
And those were some gifts that we received from someone wherever we were. We received from them. Just one of those family pictures.
Now that's unbelievable. How old are you in this picture?
It's eight.
8 years old, and you're traveling overseas. That must have been something.
Oh yeah,
that must have been absolutely.
My mom. We at the time the longest commercial flight available was from Chicago to Auckland, New Zealand, nonstop.
Oh wow, we just had a quick
back during the 747 days, but they made a 747 that was shorter, but the wingspan was long. Of course, all the fuel goes in the wings, so it could make trips like that. And they always wondered how in the world my mom had a six-year-old child on a plane for 20 hours.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Real quickly, there was a question in the chat here from Benny Scala. Did Harley like Australia as he and Larry Hennig were the first IWA tag champs? Did he like that? Did he like Australia?
Oh, yeah. He loved Australia. Australia is beautiful.
Yeah.
I hadn't seen it when we were there the first time. I hadn't seen the kangaroo. I want to see a kangaroo. So the guys told him to take this one road between two towns that, like, not the main, the highway or whatever, but take this road. We'll see. And I ended up falling asleep. Apparently, Dad saw one dead kangaroo lying on the side of the road, and that was it. And when we got to the next town, all the guys were laughing because they knew that was going to – they just sent him out in the sticks for no reason.
Oh, geez. There you go. All right, moving on with the pictures because we got a whole bunch of them here. What's this? Front yard stuff?
Yeah, that's the front. Just off to that behind me is where that Christmas wreath would have been.
Oh, wow.
Those were the double doors. And then, he had this pond built there on the side. But he's standing on the circular drive. And my mom kind of is too.
That's awesome.
And there's a fish pond. He had a bunch of koi in there. But one thing about when you're a wrestler, especially back in those days when people really did hate you.
Yeah.
We had a bunch of koi that were worth quite a bit of money, 12, 18 inches long.
Oh, sure.
And came out one day and they were all floating and there was a bunch of bubbles in the water. Right. Someone had come through and poured laundry detergent in the water and killed all the fish.
Jesus.
And he told me at one point when he was cleaning that thing, he said, "Justin, don't ever get in the fish business."
All right. Next one. Here we go. There you go. Where are we here?
That's Japan again. Actually, that is one of my dad's most unfavorite things about Japan was always sitting on the floor.
Yeah.
Okay.
In fact, they ended up everyone sits on their knees around the table in Japan.
Right.
They ended up they'd have like the table was on the floor, but underneath the table was a cutout area of a square, so you could actually sit there with your legs dangling, but it looked like you were sitting on the floor.
I got to admit, you look like that actor from Alice who played Alice's son.
McKeon, Nancy McKeon's brother.
Yeah, was it Philip McKeon?
Alice, you mean the TV show Alice?
Yeah. You look just like her son who played her son.
Oh, I don't remember her son. I just remember that one lady on that show that said, "Kiss My Grits."
That was Flo. Yes.
Yeah.
Flo.
There you go. Flo. Kiss My Grits. There you go. All right. Next one.
Yeah, that was in Japan. Just one of those, photos that. Sure. Remember the gentleman I mentioned, Kimi Okotani, the professor.
Right.
When we, after they developed their relationship, when we went to Japan, Dad's tour would finish and we'd stay for an extra week. And Kim would take us around to different, like, very high profile type people, and we'd stay with them. And Dad would speak to the Rotary Club or the JCs or whatever.
Oh, that's cool.
And so a lot of those pictures are kind of like you were saying, sometimes it was a bit of a vacation. He didn't have to work every night.
Oh, nice. Nice. All right.
That's where some of those photos come from.
Yeah, let me see. We got the next one here.
That's Hawaii again. See the matching shirts or my mom.
That's a dead
giveaway. Somehow I got either they couldn't find one to fit me, or I talked my mom out of making me wear it.
Was that your George Brett Kansas City Royals?
Kansas City Royals shirt. Yeah.
Exactly. I was just gonna say, yeah. But that's out on the balcony of the hotel room.
Oh, that's awesome. Food,
had room service type dinner. Nice. Like there's a bottle of wine or something back there.
That's cute. That's awesome. And then we have this one here. This is a nice picture of you.
Now, I believe that is back to that same hotel in Tampa.
Wow, with the palm trees. Okay, yeah.
And I'm even younger, it looks like, there. Or maybe, well.
Like you're going to be three or four, maybe.
Yeah, yeah, something like that. Somewhere around the 2-3 area, I think.
Now I know where you get the blonde
hair.
Yeah,
I remember the hotel so well, but I don't remember the name of it. In fact, I asked my mom, she doesn't remember the name of it either. We just always stayed there. If we were in Miami, we stayed at the Fontainebleau, which is, of course, still there. Beautiful hotel. And in Tampa, we stayed at this one, but I can't remember where it was. I mean, I don't remember the name of it.
We'll have to do some research on that, but that's a good
Dad with their Bermuda shorts on.
Like, who would take these pictures? Like, just random people or?
Yeah, just like any other family. We'd say, here, would you take a picture of us?
Oh, nice.
I mean, a lot of the photos that you see are professionally done because there was just photographers that followed him around.
Yep.
Kind of, I don't know, like the paparazzi, but not quite that. Paparazzi, but nice people. They're the kind that would take pictures and ask you if you would like copies of the pictures or give you the negatives.
Right. Okay. And then we have this one.
Professionally done.
Here's a good picture. It looks like a barbecue. Is that a Harley Race barbecue going on right there?
That's a Harley Race barbecue. That's our deck behind our house. Now, if my dad's left, so, you know, off his left shoulder would be the golf course, and I'm standing next to the back of the house.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, that'd be a barbecue.
Do you have any idea who's behind you guys in that picture?
No, I don't.
With that 80s sweater. It looks like it could be somebody's cousin for all I know. That's what I would say.
Looks like Jack Swagger.
I don't know who that is. I'm sorry. I don't remember.
I think we already showed that picture.
Yeah, that was in Japan.
And we got this one. This is a good picture. This looks like later on.
Yeah, I was a junior in high school. And
that mullet is flowing. That's all I know.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got Dad's curls in the back there.
I love it. I had one of those too. Oh.
And your mom's curls. Who are you kidding? You got your mom's curls too.
Yeah. Well, I kind of got a mixture. I didn't quite get the afro my dad had.
Yeah.
But I got curly, natural curly hair. But that was when I was accepted into the National Honor Society for academics.
Sure.
That's what that thing is around my neck.
Nice. And then you had sent me this today.
Oh yeah, that's a good photo. I like that.
What year was that taken? Do you know?
Oh, 2015, 16.
Yeah, I'd say 16, because, yep.
Now, is that the original?
Yeah, those two guys respected each other, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's awesome. And, of course, Harley.
In fact, at my dad's funeral, I think he said this a couple of times, but at my father's funeral, Rick said there would be no Ric Flair if it wasn't for Harley Race.
Right, exactly. It's true. That is true. And there he is in 2004, right, Harley Race?
Yeah, when he was inducted into the WWE Hall of Fame.
Were you in attendance for that by any chance?
Yes, I was.
You were? Mm-hmm. How was that being around all those legends? All in one room.
I've been around them since I was a kid. So
yeah, old hat for you, right? Yeah, old hat.
But it was really cool because I think it was supposed to last like 2 hours and it ended up lasting 4 or 5 because you get that many guys up on a stage and give them each an award and a microphone. You're going to be there for a while.
Right. Right.
But it was a really fun event.
Now, your dad has the distinction of being one of only 6 wrestlers to have been inducted into each Hall of Fame. That's the WWE, NWA, WCW, Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame, and the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Hall of Fame. Those are the major ones. I am pretty sure your dad's in a whole host of others along the line.
Oh, yeah. He's in a wrestling hall, a collegiate wrestling Hall of Fame.
Okay.
In Newton, Iowa.
Okay, yeah.
He was inducted with Dan Gable and Danny Hodge.
Wow.
Oh, wow. So big.
Danny Hodge, incidentally, my father and Danny Hodge are the only two human beings I've ever met that could take a stainless steel pair of pliers and bend the handles together.
Oh, Justin, did he? I know that Danny Hodge had double tendons in his hands. Did your dad have that as well?
You know, I don't know. Anatomically, I don't know if there was something going on with my dad's. He was a farm boy, and that's how he grew up. And he was just naturally could break anybody's fingers. he could break people's fingers squeezing in.
I heard a story that he met Bill Kazmaier, maybe at the airport or somewhere. Bill Kazmaier was won the World's Strongest Man several times. He wrestled for WCW, and he and Harley engaged in a game of mercy, or that Roman knuckle test of strength, and your dad brought Bill Kazmaier to his knees as a testament to his strength.
The guys knew about my dad's hands.
Yeah.
And they figured this guy was pretty strong, but they knew still that it didn't matter how strong you are. You're being Harley.
So they ribbed
this guy into going over. You know, he met my father actually in the dressing room. And he went over, and dad's got, of course, a cigarette in one hand. And he pokes it. Hey, here you got a pretty good grip. And dad's, I guess it's fair.
Wow. Yeah.
So the guy put his hand out. Dad never got out of the chair and never put the cigarette out. You could hear the bones crunch.
The world's strongest man.
He brought it down and under and had that guy up dancing around on his tiptoes like a little girl.
Yep.
And, that's what I liked about watching Harley wrestle. He wasn't like that muscle man guy, but you could tell he was strong.
Oh, he looked like a badass.
The gut-wrenching suplexes were... he was lifting dead weight. You know, nowadays, they help you out with those suplexes, but he would just lift these guys up like they were nothing. And you could tell
he was strong. Too.
Yeah.
I mean, Andre. his middle, it always made my mom mad. She was an aerobics instructor. She's very athletic herself. She's a professional water skier and aerobics instructor and whatnot.
Oh, wow. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
And she would, you know, remember those little guns that they take and you can measure your body fat?
Yeah.
Those little thing, you know, you put the little whatever. She always got so mad because he had that gut, but she could never measure any body fat because it was so tight. And he'd tell, you know, it's like the Olympic power lifters or whatever. Yep. They all have big guts. It's called a trunk.
Yeah.
You have to have a trunk in order to lift that kind of weight.
Right.
We had Andre up here like this.
Yeah.
Andre was 7'6" and weighed nearly, 556, whatever.
Yeah.
A lot of pounds. And he had Andre up there. Andre said, "Boss, put me down. Boss, put me down." He said, "Excuse me." He said, "Shut up, you big son of a bitch. Someone's got to take a picture of this."
I've seen that picture.
That's like that low center of gravity. If you have that, that's really good. I mean, to have that
unlimited pain tolerance and unlimited strength.
That's exactly
medic wonder, man. Yep. Yeah,
and that's a hard sell too. Unless you're a guy like Harley Race, if you're just a normal wrestler like that, that's a hard sell come across like that. I mean, because it's not attractive to fans and so forth. But if you're Harley Race and you back it up with that strength and everything, it's unbelievable. Your dad, I mean, when I was fortunate enough to see your dad wrestle, I think it was 85, 86, when he finally came over to the WWF, whatever, as King Harley, I got to see him wrestle at the Boston Garden. And I was just, you know, that was the first time as a teenager for me that I got to see an NWA wrestler, wrestle. And, you know, at least Vince was fortunate enough to let him do his thing with the headbutts and all that stuff. But, while we're on that topic real quick, how was your dad's overall feeling of signing with the WWF? I mean, obviously him and Vince McMahon were at odds. I mean, we've heard the stories, the lighting of the ring on fire. That's one that comes to mind, but here's a guy that pretty much hated Vince McMahon because he was infringing on his territory. What was his thoughts when he ended up signing with him? I know everybody was doing
it. Eventually, you can be as stubborn and old-fashioned as you want, but eventually you got to kind of keep up with the times.
Right.
I'm sure my dad hated cell phones when they came out too, but he got one.
Yeah.
So, you know, you just kind of, you go with the flow. I mean, I've never had anything against Vince McMahon. He's always been a very nice man to me.
Right.
And as far as anything between he and my dad, I mean, I was not a witness to it. I heard about it, of course. But I'll never forget in Poughkeepsie, New York, when they crowned Dad the King of the Ring and they brought him in on the throne and whatever.
Yeah.
We were in the dressing room and I found, I don't know how or why, but I found $240, like in 20s. And I wouldn't
be able to ask
Dad, I just found this money.
Oh, wow.
So he took it to Vince and said, "My son just found this money." And Vince said, "Your son's got a lot of integrity, you know, for not just sticking it in his pocket." And he said, "Well, you better." And I was like, "Yeah, you've had my dad for a dad. You'd be have integrity too." And Vince said, "Well, Harley, no, you know, just let him keep it. You're not keeping 200. What? It's not his money." So he said, "Watch this." He turned around and he into the dressing room. He said, "All right, anybody lose any money?" Of course, everyone raised their hand. Bobby Heenan said, "Is it green?" And so he said, "Harley, I can't do it. Well, my son's not gonna have it." And Vince looked at my dad. He said, "All right, I lost it. It's my money." And then he turned to me and handed it to me. And he said, "And now it's yours." That's you're a very well-mannered young man or something like that. And that's one of the fondest memories I have of Vince is he was nice to me. Yeah. In fact, that Hall of Fame picture that we were saying a while ago.
Yeah.
When they finally got those guys off the stage, quit talking at 3 o'clock in the morning. That one.
Yeah.
We got in the elevator to ride up, in the hotel of this auditorium where this ceremony took place. And Vince and his wife happened to be on the elevator. And I turned around and I said, Mr. McMahon, do you remember in Poughkeepsie, New York, when I found that money and you gave it back to me? He said, yeah, I remember that.
Oh, wow.
I still hope you're as well-mannered as you are now as you were then, but it better be. But yeah, he remembered it.
Yeah.
So,
Did Harley turn to you when you had the money and says, don't tell your mother?
Oh, yeah. Oh, well, he didn't want me to have it, so he knew that my mother didn't want me to have it.
So as Harley, towards the end of Harley's time here on Earth, did he die of lung cancer? Is that what I read?
Had lung cancer.
Okay.
But he wasn't in any type of shape to be able to go through treatment for it.
Right.
But it wasn't a horrendous, stage 4 type deal.
Okay.
He had lung cancer. Well, he got pneumonia. And unfortunately, if I remember correctly, the pneumonia was behind the lung cancer, so they couldn't treat the pneumonia because the cancer was in the way.
Okay.
And so there was really nothing they could do.
Was it a quick thing, or was he sick for a long
time? No, it lasted for a while.
Yeah.
It strung out. I mean, the last thing I really remember my dad like being, I guess, there.
Right.
He was in the hospital, and I was standing next to his hospital bed, and I just laid down and put my head on a big old chest even then. And I put my head on his chest, and I kind of was crying. I mean, he probably could feel me shaking. And I just remember him, he couldn't talk, or he didn't know if he was there or not.
Right, right.
But he put his hand up on my back, and he patted me on the back. And I knew that he knew that I was there. And
of that's course. The last.
And that was pretty much it.
He passed away then? Right then, there.
Well, no, it's been another day or two later, but
right,
he was out of it, whether medication or sick or whatever.
I understand how that goes.
That was the last cognizant thing that he ever did with me was pat me on the back and basically, I'm going to be okay. You go on.
And that, how did that make you feel?
Comforted at the time, but of course, then when he passes away 2 days later, you're wishing that maybe one more of those times could have happened or something.
Right. No, I totally get that. I've been affected.
At the moment, it meant a lot to me. Two days or 3 days later, when he actually passed on, then that moment even meant more to me.
Right. Exactly. And a lot of people don't get that moment. So you're very lucky to have that. So that,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Thank God every day that at least I got to. That moment with
it's poetic. There's a beauty in it, I think, too. And
yes,
just for him. Well,
he had crossed his finish line.
Yeah,
he did everything he ever wanted to do. He accomplished everything he ever wanted to accomplish. He's one of those few people, like he told me, that did exactly what he wanted every day of his life.
Yep,
and never had another job. And he just. I don't want to say he was waiting to die, but he, except for maybe like watching me become a success or seeing my family, he did everything he was here on earth to do.
Right.
And I don't blame him.
Some people aren't fortunate enough to have that. So that right there is a comforting thought that he lived his life.
Well, and I knew when I was young that these were shoes I wasn't going to fill.
Right. But you're filling them in other ways, though. You're carrying along.
Yeah, 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 exactly. I'm doing what he asked me to, which is use my head.
Yeah, exactly.
I couldn't play football, so
I went
into business.
So real quickly, before we wrap things up here, because I know we've been going for a while, a new book. You're writing
I'm concerned.
You're writing a book, correct? It's obviously Don't Tell Your Mother. A lot of antidotes in it. Do you have a date that it's going to be out or anything like that? Or
I'm hoping before this calendar year.
Okay.
I'm really pushing for that.
Right.
Of course, I'll let you know.
Sure. Yeah, but definitely.
I'm hoping that, when books are either released in the spring or Christmas time.
Right.
Before
exactly.
Christmas. So nice. I'm hoping to get there before Christmas.
So can you tell us one more little antidote out of that, maybe? Don't tell your mother.
So many things, so many come to my mind.
Oh yeah.
And especially with going through this last year with Vice, seems like every time someone says something, it reminds me of the story of my dad.
Oh, sure.
He was just so, for a quiet, big, what do you want? Just a quiet, big man. He had so many funny things that he said that if you just had to be there at that moment, or you didn't have to be there, but just you had to pay attention. You remember the old financial firm, E.F. Hutton?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And their tagline and their commercial, you know, they'd say, well, my broker's E.F. Hutton, and E.F. Hutton says, and everyone quiets down and listens.
Yeah.
If E.F. Hutton talks, people listen. That's how my father was. He never said anything. But if he did, everyone shut up.
Right.
Because it was either going to be hilarious or full of wisdom.
Right. That's called wry wit. Yes.
Yeah.
He definitely.
So I came to mind. In the 70s, you remember the Jeep Wagoneers back then? They had that switch in the glove box, and you could turn it on emergency, the red button in the glove box, and it made all four tires pull at the same time, like a tank.
Yeah.
And I mean, they were like a tank. They had to weigh 10,000 pounds.
Yeah.
Well, he had one of those. Flair liked it, so he sold it to Flair and bought a new one. And we were in somewhere in the Carolinas in Flair's neck of the woods. And we left the arena that night, and Rick was in front of us, and he stopped at a stoplight. My dad pulls up. He looks at me. I wonder how powerful this thing is. So he pushes the bumper, touches the bumper of Flair, and pushes Flair through the stoplight.
Oh, boy.
You know, tires squealing, smoke going everywhere. Well, of course, the police officer saw. So he comes, you know, right up behind him. He thinks he's going to bust two crazy old guys or him. He didn't know what he was going to do. And he about gets Rick. Rick gets, and now my dad gets, and the guy realizes who they are, and oh my god, he's on the radio not calling for backup, calling for guys to come just to get autographs.
Awesome.
And so, you know, we were there for an hour or whatever, signing autographs and this and that, and we got in the car and took off, and he turned to me and said, don't tell your mother. That was probably his quote for me of my lifetime, don't tell your mother.
You sounded like you had a very wonderful experience growing up with your dad. Obviously, you guys
were, it was animated, that's for sure.
It was animated. You were very close, it seems, because I know when my dad said, don't tell your mother, that means it was a bond. You know, don't tell your mother. Yeah. So, you know, it's the man code.
And he expected it too. I mean, he wasn't just saying I mean, you know, with the promo look, with the eyebrow and the whatnot, don't tell your mother.
I used to reverse it on my dad. I, you know, if I got into shenanigans and all that I knew they wouldn't approve, I said, don't tell mom.
I did that. I did get to tell him that once.
Oh, there you go.
And I said it back to him like that. There, we had a lake house, and we had a one of those offshore boats, Scarab.
Yeah.
With big engines and whatnot. Well, my friends and I used to make an excuse to, we want to sleep in the nose of the boat. Well, the excuse was, there's a liquor store near the lake house. They knew who I was. If I walked in with my dad, they act like they didn't know me. If I went in without my dad, they'd actually sell me beer. I'd buy some beer during the day, and we're going to sleep in the boat.
Yeah.
All right, man. So I don't know why you kids want to sleep in that damn boat, but whatever. So we go down there, and we sit there and drink beers all night and sink the cans off the end of the dock, get rid of the evidence.
Right.
Well, I was we've been scuba divers since I could swim. I've been scuba diving. And I was the find it kid in the cove. When people dropped their screwdriver, their wedding ring, whatever off their dock, I had my own equipment. I'd scuba dive and go find it for him. Well, he dropped a screwdriver off he was working on something on the dock, dropped the screwdriver off. And I said, well, I'll go get it. So I'll go with you. Well, all right. I didn't even think about it. You get down to the bottom, and there's hundreds of beer cans everywhere under the dock. On the bottom, you know, some of them like algae on them, some of them shiny, brand new. And I looked at him, and he looked at me. Of course, you have the regular; you can't say anything.
Oh boy!
So we got up to the top, we surfaced, and he pulled that thing out. He looked at me, and I looked at him, and I said, "Don't tell my mother."
Role reversal. I love it.
that was the time that I got to say it to him.
That is,
and he didn't. That was one of those things that she found out recently, I think.
What do they call that? The time frame for that is expired, right?
Statute of limitations.
Statute of limitations. Yeah.
I used to get like that when I got older. Statute of limitations here. Doesn't count.
Yeah, really.
You know, that's so funny.
Can't get mad now.
That's no. Awesome. Sounds like we were blessed.
It was going to affect me. It already did.
Yeah. Old school dads are the best.
Do you still have like some of your dad's memorabilia, like his plaque for the Hall of Fame and so forth? Do you guys still have that?
Yeah, a lot of it's in a museum.
Yeah, always did. Okay.
I look at it as I've seen it all my life.
It's sure.
The fans right. that yep. need to see it. I don't need to. I know what that 10 pounds of gold looked like. I hauled it around for him and tried to carry that big Halliburton case, that metal case that he carried as a wrestling bag. And I'd try to carry that. I don't know how many times nearly broke my toes dropping that thing on my feet trying to carry it for him.
That's awesome.
But, I've grew up with it. I've seen all that. I've had it in my home. It's now it's time to let the fans see it.
Was the belt actually about 10 pounds?
The belt? Oh, yeah.
It was really 10 pounds. Shoot. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Well, what that was just the 10 pounds of gold was the center. There were still the placards of the four countries, the Australia, Mexico, Japan. Yeah. And can't remember the other fourth.
Canada?
Country. Around it. Was it Canada?
It might have been. It was. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
That belt, if you've ever noticed the globe on the belt that they used for many years, I think they got a new one now.
I was just going to say what you say. Go ahead, say it.
the one that had the globe on it, the protruding, it was a stainless steel.
Yeah.
And it had a dent in it.
Yeah.
If you ever notice when you see pictures of like guys with it, you can tell by the shadow that there's a dent in it. That dent was from when Ric Flair hit my dad over the head with it.
Oh, wow.
You dented the belt.
That's where the dent came from.
That had to hurt.
My dad's hard head. Well, stainless steel, I guess he won.
I think so.
Yeah.
Except that he could never remember where anything was anymore.
That's putting your literal stamp on the sport right there.
Yeah.
There
you
go. Yeah. Your head, man.
I believe that. In fact, now that I think, I think that belt is in a museum, and I think it even has a placard that says where the dent came from.
Oh, nice. Awesome. That is really cool. Well, I want to thank you, Justin, for coming on. I know
thank you so much.
We've been chatting for an hour and a half here, and I figured we were going to go a little bit longer tonight. We had a lot of questions from everybody in the chat.
No, I'm great. I you know, that's one thing I try to do, you know, and especially in this last month or two. Repo, when you send something off to someone, you don't expect to hear back. Right. And I do my best to read almost every comment that I get.
Right.
And if nothing else, I give them a thumbs up. Some people will tell me some very dramatic stories about their life and how watching wrestling got them through it and whatever. And I'll spend some time and write back to them. Anytime you want to talk to me, feel free, my Facebook or whatever.
Yeah.
So it's an honor for me to take his legacy and keep it going.
Well, it's an honor for me. I mean, it's an honor for us for you sharing these unbelievable.
Well, I really appreciate that. But again, as I say, we could go on for. I love to talk about my dad. I respected my dad. He was, you know, who was your hero when you were a kid? Well, my dad. So it's, you know, I never tire nor ever. If I have like he said, if you're not bleeding to death or on your way late for work, give them their 5 minutes.
Right.
Then I will take that to my grave.
Good karma, man. Yeah.
Good karma. And he had a very successful career with that mentality. So,
yes. It's
been a pleasure for us. I'm sure I speak on behalf of Phil.
Honor.
For taking the time out. Justin, you've been very personable. Please. You've been very great to talk to. Even before the show, we've chatted a few times and email and conversations on the phone. And
Who'd have thought? 40 years ago, I see this man as a youngster in a wrestling magazine, and I'm talking to him today.
40 years later, we are.
10 years later. What a trip. Yeah.
Exactly. That's how I felt when I first met Bill Apter. The same thing, you know. It was like after all these years, and me and him clicked. Next year, I'm on the phone with him and meeting him, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is the guy that
we feel like we know Bill these people.
I remember Bill to be a wonderful man. I mean, he stayed at the house many times.
He said articles
for back then. You had to, you know, there's a lot more of a production than it is nowadays with the cameras and whatnot.
Yeah, you said that they used to come in like a team of people, right? They would come.
Oh, yeah. Back in the day, if they did a magazine thing on Dad or whatever, it was Wrestling Magazine or Rolling Stone Magazine, whatever. A whole squadron would be there. It'd be soundmen and cameramen and directors and producers and, of course, the on-air talent. And
yeah.
It was like a production. And then now, a couple of weeks ago, I did a television spot for the sports show for one of the networks, local network show, network news.
Okay.
And, he said, hey, we'd do it at my place. I said, all right. And he shows up, just him and a camera. And did the whole interview just like that. I'm like, man, back in the day, this took, like I said, a squadron of people.
The interview with Vice TV, same thing, right?
Exactly. I mean, I'm expecting quite a bit. And there was, that was a lot more than like the doing the news here. They had lights and they had the microphones over here and under here, and they had the two cameras offset. But still, it was just three of them. And in fact, one of the things during the interview, Dave, who we first talked to, I told you that we met about a year ago.
Yeah.
He wasn't there during the filming when they came to interview me. So we're going through the interview, and somehow I could tell that the guy asking the question wasn't the guy coming up with the question. And I said, who are you talking to? He said, Dave. I said, you're talking to Dave right now? I said, Dave is watching this being filmed in Toronto by Zoom or whatever.
Wow. I'm like,
no kidding. So Dave is sitting there feeding him questions from Toronto to ask me in Kansas City. I'm like,
It's all changed. The technology's all changed. I totally understand.
Unbelievable.
TV cameras. Yeah. It's very rare that you get a whole setup now that would come to your home and all that stuff. So,
I know it. Yeah. Back then, that's one of the reasons, but thank God my mom kept all these photographs and this memorabilia. A lot of that when I said they were professionally done, when they would come and they'd take pictures of us. There's a picture on the internet. I put it out there of my dad and I playing chess. And, they wanted just like around the house type things. And I captioned that the picture that they have of my dad and I playing chess is that the funny part about this picture is my dad didn't play chess. It was just like one of those around the house moments that they said, go sit down at this table and act like you're playing chess. So all the photographers would come around and they take these hundreds and hundreds of pictures, like the guy on the side of the football field with a big long lens and, just running off photos just to get that one perfect shot. So they get done with these interviews and you've got hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of pictures that they didn't use or whatever. And then, do you want these? My mom would say, sure. So you just have boxes of thousands of photos.
It's a generation. That is definitely a generational thing. It's like I said earlier in the show, my mother took pictures. There was a camera in every room, like a Kodak Instamatic, whatever it was, Polaroids on Saturday night.
Polaroids.
And now there is a camera. There's four cameras in every room. If there's four people, everyone's got a phone.
There you go. Yeah, the age of technology. That is something. But Justin, thank you so much for coming on.
Oh, you're so welcome.
Really appreciate it. I know we keep saying goodbye. Like I said, we could do this for hours. I
know. We keep going.
Yeah.
One more story. Let you know when your book comes out, we're definitely going to have you back on because we're going to.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you. I appreciate that.
The book. So keep me in your Rolodex.
Hey, it was Phil. It was nice to meet you, by the way.
Justin, you as well. Such a pleasure, man. Super cool.
It's been an honor for me as well.
Great. Yeah. And also, thank your mom.
This is not work for me. I wouldn't rather be any other place.
There you go. And thank your mom. You got to thank mom.
Oh, yeah.
For coming on. That was great.
Yeah.
Yep. She's great. That was fun. So that's going to do it for us here with What a Day on behalf of Phil DeCesare, the president.
God bless you guys.
And of course, Harley Race's son, Justin. What a great guy. He's got a new book coming out. It's coming out soon. He's still writing it. Hopefully it's almost done, but Don't Tell Your Mother. I love that title. That to me just says buy it right there.
Absolutely. I don't want to give any of the kids out there any ideas, though.
Yeah, there you go. And I want to thank everybody in the chat. Right. You got to thank everybody in the chat because they were rocking and rolling. They were asking questions.
Yes,
and,
thank you so much. We have a good fan base here. A chat or not, or a question or not, thank you so much for being here. Love talking to you. Hit me up on Facebook. I will get back to you. It might not be that day or whatever, but I'll get back to you.
But it was great. And if you're not doing it tomorrow night, you can tune into this channel for wrestling's hottest game show, The 30, is taking place. And you can see myself and Phil DeCesare and a couple other jabronis that go at it. It's a wrestling game show. I believe it's the only wrestling game show.
Bill after I said hi. Next time I want to talk to him.
Bill wanted me to ask you. I'll just ask you right now. Is it okay to give him your phone number?
Sure.
Okay. He asked me that last night. I meant to tell you that. But
absolutely. You have
He apologized. Okay, yeah. He's covering AEW. He wanted me to like move my show. And I'm like, I can't move it. You know, so
we've been advertising this.
He was going to try and pop on, but he will. We'll get together. Maybe us three will do something in the future. And
that'd be great. I'd love to see Bill again. I know my mom would love to see Bill too. I
mean, oh, there you go. Excellent. Yeah. She talks. She has great things to say about your mom as well. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
All right, folks. That's going to do it for us. Guys, have a great one. I'm Joe Lowry. As always, what a day.
What a day.